Hello, it's Norman Swan here. Welcome to the Health Report. On this week's program, new treatments on the blocks for a pain in the neck.
Well, the most common thing is people present to us and they've got severe pain radiating down their arm. It can either come on slowly as people age and they get degeneration, but sometimes people have a minor accident or they fall or slip and they get pain after that. And there's also a group of patients who almost present silently where they have problems with their walking or problems with fine movements in their hand, and that's due to compression of the spinal cord, but they usually don't have any pain, ironically.
And the pain can be quite severe.
Absolutely. The pain can be very severe and really affect people's ability to enjoy life and carry out daily tasks.
Also later, speaking of a pain in the neck, that's what a listener experienced when she opened the box of an electronic blood sugar meter to control her diabetes.
It offers you free membership, free lifetime warranty, free replacement of meter batteries, the opportunity to win $500. Yes, sounds extra inviting, free lifetime warranty. Then it leads on to 23 questions that I found really intrusive. When I read that, I started to think I didn't really want to answer these questions. I get the feeling it's conditional. I don't have the impression that you would have your lifetime guarantee if you left out the answers to any of these questions.
And the influence of the pharmaceutical industry on doctors, a major area of controversy and debate. Some people hold up the sign of the cross whenever the pharmaceutical industry is mentioned, while others say that doctors' education would be unaffordable without pharma support. Well, a group of researchers has looked at the international evidence to see whether the effects are good or ill. Geoffrey Sperling is in the discipline of general practice at the University of Queensland.
My first experience with drug reps was on work experience at a GP surgery when I was 15 or 16, and a nice well-dressed man brought along sandwiches and pens and clocks indeed. And he also showed the doctors a video. And the thing that surprised me was how rude and offhand the doctors were in the face of these presents. Quite surprised me as a 16-year-old at school. And then I went on to do medicine, and as a student with not very much money, I enjoyed a number of very nice dinners, which included alcohol, and this was kind of irresistible as a medical student. And then you enter the hospital system, and drug company lunches with presentations become the norm, and you start to expect them, in fact. What changed for me was working with Médecins Sans Frontières in Honduras on Chagas disease, which is a so-called neglected disease. The existing drugs for that disease were developed by veterinary researchers for animals, and they're not very effective in humans and cause a lot of side effects. I was actually seeing this happen amongst my patients. And I think this really brought home for me that the bottom line for drug companies is their shareholder and not necessarily the doctor or their patients. And seeing their information through this prism, I began to really question what I was listening to when I came back home and again had some contact with sales representatives. This prompted me to team up with others from Healthy Skepticism, which is a group concerned about misleading advertising, and developed some skills and systematic reviews, and so this project became an obvious choice for me.
And systematic reviews are where you take the published literature and sometimes even the unpublished literature in this area and you see what it all amounts to when you add it up statistically.
Yeah, that's right. So this is the first time anyone systematically looked through all the medical literature for studies on this topic.
And this is the impact of pharmaceutical marketing on doctors' prescribing habits.
It's actually all types of information and how it impacted on the quality of prescribing and cost of prescribing and also the frequency of prescribing.
And was any of this randomised controlled trials where people were actually studying or just observation of what happened?
All but two were observational. The two randomised controlled trials looked at partnerships between drug companies and in one case a health authority and in the other case an academic institution, and the aims of those studies were trying to harness the power of pharmaceutical promotion, I guess, to improve prescribing, and neither of those randomised controlled trials found any change in prescribing.
And how reliable were the other studies, given how difficult this must be to study and get a comparator?
The studies were all of quite varying quality. You can't establish causality. For example, in cases where we found that doctors' prescribing increased and that was associated with pharmaceutical information, it could be that those doctors prescribed more and therefore attracted more drug company representatives rather than the other way around.
So in essence, what did you find?
We didn't find any benefit to doctors from pharmaceutical company information. And this is contrary to what the pharmaceutical industry claim. They claim their information's educational and beneficial.
How did you define benefit?
We looked at the outcomes of quality of prescribing and cost of prescribing. We found studies that demonstrated associations between seeing pharmaceutical representatives and less rational prescribing and also less adherence to guidelines. And cost of prescribing was also measured in a number of different ways. One researcher using an econometric model found that information from drug companies was associated with increased price sensitivity among physicians, and this is a good thing. However, it was contradicted by two other studies using similar models finding associations with reduced price sensitivities amongst doctors. A UK study looked at 1,700 GPs and divided them into high-cost and low-cost prescribers using a national database of prescribing. And it found that those GPs who fell into the high-cost group were three times more likely to see pharmaceutical sales representatives at least once a week. And they were also more likely to read journal advertisements and mailed advertisements from pharmaceutical companies than were low-cost prescribers.
It may be that increased price is a bad thing, but increased price may also be a reflection of closer adherence to the evidence. I mean, one classic example is notoriously doctors underprescribe for heart failure in this country and people who leave hospital after a heart attack.
Yeah, I guess the surprising thing from looking at all the medical literature was that we couldn't find examples really of benefit. We found a lot of examples where prescribing increased, and there may be times when that's a good thing. There may be situations where pharmaceutical promotion leads to improved prescribing and improved outcomes for patients. I should add that none of the studies looked at outcomes for patients, so any conclusions based on patients themselves or clinical outcomes are speculative.
The surprising thing is also that you found no effect from the randomised controlled trials where you're actually trying to do good things. I thought the international evidence was that when healthcare systems used, and Australia has been a leader in this, used the techniques of the pharmaceutical industry to actually sell good prescribing practices to doctors, that it actually worked. But you said you haven't found the evidence of that.
Well, that may be the case, but I guess when drug companies themselves and their representatives have been used...
Oh, I see. So it's rather than the techniques, it's when they've used the companies as the vehicle.
That's certainly what we found in this review.
So the takeaway here is what?
So I guess if you conceptualise drug company information as a drug, which makes doctors prescribe more but potentially at higher cost and potentially less rationally and with less adherence to guidelines, we thought that this is a drug that patients might not want their doctors to be taking. So at the end of the review, we recommended that doctors follow a precautionary principle and avoid information from pharmaceutical sales representatives unless evidence of benefit emerges. In fact, the editor's summary concluded that the findings support the case for reforms to reduce the negative influence to prescribing from pharmaceutical promotion.
And how would that happen?
A little bit like what the National Prescribing Service do at the moment.
And just to explain, the National Prescribing Service is a government-funded organisation which aims to get quality use of medicines, in other words, rational prescribing according to the evidence.
Yeah, so for example, I had an interesting and informative visit from an NPS representative a few weeks ago. He told me when to prescribe and, importantly, when not to prescribe as well. He didn't give me any pens and wasn't wearing a suit, but I felt that I could trust the information. And I think if you had a process where drug companies had an incentive to provide information that was accurate and allowed doctors to more readily adhere to guidelines, then I think that would be a beneficial thing.
Geoffrey Sperling is in the discipline of general practice at the University of Queensland.